Women around culture and politics. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, the bike show gets into the technical details of helmets and how these safety shells help or hinder bicyclists. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
May is Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Month. So to recognize our Asian and Pacific Islander American identified community, KBOO will be airing all Asian and Pacific Islander programming from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd. That day, we'll be airing features from your favorite API KBOO programmers. Tune in to hear episodes of Lip Fantastic, APA Compass, DMA Roberts' award-winning series, Crossing East, and an all-new Pacific Underground and music playlist by Sun Lee and DJ Diablo. That's Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Day, Friday, May 3rd, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information and program schedule, just go to our website at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th Birthday Celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The 6th annual Pete Seeger Tribute is a family-friendly sing-along event that features Lauren Sheehan, Peter Hayes, Ben Davis, Bill Merlin, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th Birthday Celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Next up is Preference with Hedda. And before we go to Preference, KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a master's degree in health administration for those who want to make healthcare equitable through quality leadership and effective policies. More information online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School.
Welcome to My Preference, dear listeners. I'm your host tonight, Hedda. I want to thank Somia for being in the booth, keep us on the air, and I want to thank everybody who participated in this month's pledge drive to make community radio thrive. Thank you for being part of the KBOO community and for everything, all our volunteers, all our hosts, our staff, and you, our listeners. Thanks so much. We have Lisa Sapphire, is that right?
Sapphire,
thank you. In a studio with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Lisa, you own another read-through?
I do.
Down on Mississippi?
That's correct.
It's a bookstore. Tell us about the store.
It's a new and used mixed general bookstore, and we really try to focus on both local authors and queer authors and highlight both of those communities to get their books out into the hands of readers so that everyone can experience both the queer stuff and the Portland stuff.
How have you found it to be having a business on Mississippi?
It's a really great street. It's a fun street. There's a lot on the street. It's a bit of an expensive street to be on as well. Mm-hmm. But it's a really fun place to be. I really like being there. When I first moved to Portland, we randomly ended up in North Portland, and I love North Portland. It's such a vibrant place that I'm just drawn there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what made you want to open a bookstore?
I have wanted to have a bookstore since I was a child. I just love books, and I love mm-hmm. matching that book with the right person and getting people reading and excited about reading and stories. And stories for me are the crux of it all, and just sharing stories with people in a way that I can see it changes lives, I think. And so, I've just always wanted to do it.
Yeah, wonderful. And how long has it been?
We opened in August of 2012.
Okay. I got a copy of a book by Michael Nava there. He does a detective series, I guess, with a Latino HIV positive recovering mm-hmm. alcoholic attorney or ex-attorney. I'm not entirely clear whether he's practicing or trying to get back into the practice. Anyway, he's got a series. They're amazing books. A lot of heart, a lot of grit. Michael Nava suggested to folks check them out.
I've not ever read his books, but I do enjoy recommending them.
Mm-hmm, indeed. So we are here to talk about the lesbian lit group that you organize.
Yes, we've had a book group that's been reading lesbian literature since December of 2013. We've met every month since then, which is pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been a lot of groups that have come and gone over the years.
That's true. We're pretty steady. I love it.
What made you get the group started?
You know, I was thinking about that earlier today and trying to remember because it's been so long. And what I do remember is I was a pretty novice bookseller. I was still pretty new to the business. And someone came into the store and just asked me a question about lesbian literature. And I didn't have a great answer for her because I believe really, really strongly in the visibility conversation that everyone's having now about being able to see yourself in a book, in a main character or in a story, and being able to see your story play out. I think it's super important to be able to, you know, to have, for kids to have access to queer characters or differently abled characters, people of color. But personally, as a reader, I always wanted to read people who weren't me. I wanted to read about stories that I didn't understand or places that I've never been to before. That was a way for me to experience those things. And so I had never really read a lot of queer literature before. And I realized I was really missing out on what our community was offering. And I really wanted to sort of catch up with what I had missed. And I knew that we have such a vibrant community, queer community here in Portland. I thought I probably wouldn't be the only one who wanted to do that. And I thought it would be a great way to get my own reading that I wanted to get done and meet people in the community. And so we launched.
I think that's probably, why a lot of people become educators so that they can get themselves to read.
Right.
And read with. You started with Written on the Body.
We did.
Way back when.
Way back when.
That's something close to a classic.
Yeah, so one of the, I don't know if goals is the right word, but one of the main ideas of the group was to read both known work and known artists, as well as some lesser known authors. And when we first started, our intention was every other month to read a contemporary book, and then every other month to read, at the time I called it like lesbian canon, and now it's more of a flashback sort of month thing. But after meeting for more than 5 years, we end up making that more of a 2 to 3 contemporary books for every older book. But when we started, I mean, Written on the Body, that is a classic, and Jeanette Winterson is, of course, a really well-known lesbian author, and we wanted to read a book that both is well-known, but also that sparks a lot of conversation, which that one absolutely does. It's one of my favorites of all time, actually.
What are some of the other older stories that you've pulled out? I loved the Gilda stories. That was one of my favorite books a long time ago.
1991, I believe it won the Lambda Award. So it's, yes, that was one of our flashback months for sure. We've, you know, of course, Ruby Fruit Jungle we read. There are some books I feel like you just have to read as as a lesbian lit book group. Mm-hmm. That's one of them. Zombie by Audre Lorde was kind of revelatory, actually. Mm-hmm. I had never read that one before. Some other older ones include The Color Purple and Curious Wine, Annie on My Mind, Patience and Sarah, some of the tried and true.
So let's talk about, I'll ask you what your reaction to Zombie was.
Oh, you know, I knew Audre Lorde, her work as a poet, more than anything else. And I had really never read her long form stuff. And it was just, having that voice in my head was wonderful. The depth of her thought and where she took her own experience, I felt like was just, it was really something to read. Really enjoyed that. And it was another book that sparked really great conversation. Her ideas are so powerful, mm-hmm. that, and we are mostly a group of white women, and so also talking about issues of race, I think, was really important for us to do.
And Fun Home. Let's talk about Alison Bechdel. I grew up, you know, we had just out as the newspaper here for, felt like eons. It was I felt like I grew up with it. And Dykes to Watch Out For was, you know, something we read every week.
Right.
Every week. So it was such a different thing to have her come out with these so personal and so harsh graphic memoirs.
Indeed. Yeah. I had first read that book for a different book group that I was in, and that was my first ever graphic novel graphic anything that I'd ever read in my life. And if you're not familiar with the form, it can be a little bit challenging, I think, at first. But having read it the second time, we read it for group in January of 2017. It's the graphic book that I hold all their other graphic books up to, and I know that I can like them because of this book, mm-hmm. but I often find that they lack depth in comparison, because this book in particular, and you referred to her other one as well, her Are You My Mother, mm-hmm. but the level of introspection that she fits on a panel, I feel like it's amazing. You know, she uses more words probably than your average graphic novelist or memoirist, but compared to a textbook, you know, there's very little words in it, and she can get so deep into an issue with her drawings. You can see a look on someone's face and understand what they're thinking. It's really, she's very impressive to me.
I think Fun Home is also interesting because she, and maybe it's from her own, maybe it's some reflection of her her experience as essentially a soap opera writer, serial narrative. But there's something in Fun Home that keeps pulling you forward. You think you've got it solved. You think you sort of got everything, and you're just going to take it easy and just sort of chew on the hard stuff. But there's more. There's more to be connected. There's more drawing you forward. And I don't think it's a book that resolves easily in the end.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, this overarching question of her father's, not just sexuality, but pedophilia, I think is no, not resolvable. Not resolvable at all by the end.
Yeah. What are you reading right now for group?
We are reading a book by Hannah Wilson called Riding Fury Home. It's a memoir, and so it's funny that you just picked out that memoir because we don't read very many memoirs, but it was time for another one. And that's one of our newer books that was written in 2012. And it's a memoir. It's a sort of almost like a dual memoir of a mother and daughter, and each of them are lesbians, and they come out in different times, in the 50s and the 70s, or late 60s, and just what it was like to come out in those times, and a lot of the mental health issues that went along with coming out in the 50s, and what it was like to not be able to express your own identity.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, you've already got lined up for June, Stray City. Now, this is a book that's on my, you know, I think we get 150 at the library. You get 20 holds, which is, that's really hard for me. My hold list is always full, and then I've got a sheet.
Your secondary hold list.
Yeah. And Stray City is on the hold list after that, so it hasn't been bumped up yet. Should I?
Probably you should. I haven't read it yet since it's for our June group, but it just came out in paperback, which is, I've been waiting for it to come out in paperback. It got a lot of hype when it came out last year, I think January of last year. And I mean, it takes place in Portland, so mm-hmm. it's a very, Portland in the 90s, but it's a very Portland story. And yeah, people are raving about it. I'm pretty excited to read it. Yeah, I think you should move it up.
All right, good. Oh, Portland in the 90s, that's when we were all reading Dykes to Watch Out For.
That's right.
Now, you know, there was a newspaper / news magazine called PQ that took over for a couple few years. We had some folks who wrote for it, and that was the monthly gay press, and that probably stopped publishing paper edition, I want to say, less than 2 years ago.
That was here in Portland?
Mm-hmm. They had trouble, as everyone always does. And it became harder and harder to physically find, until then it disappeared altogether. And now PQ is just a collection of local news piled into a website.
Totally
covers
different.
A number of cities, so you can get like...
You know, the whole idea of having trouble, of a publication like that having trouble, is also one of the reasons I wanted to have this book group. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a small group. It's not like we're buying, you know, 50 books a month or anything, because we're not. But supporting queer stories and queer authors, and letting the major distribution center in the country, which is where I source our books, letting them know that people are reading these stories and want these stories, so that they then stock them more frequently and mm-hmm. in greater numbers. I feel like, you know, I'm doing this little tiny small bit to help queer authors keep their name out there, keep their book in print, or, you know, get those books out and get them paid a little bit with their work.
Indeed. How do you decide which books are going
to... Along those lines, they have to be available, mm-hmm. and often they're not. So we're, like a lot of the older books in particular, I'm waiting for, you know, Stonebush Blues to come back into print, for example. That's one that I think we need to be reading, but it's not available. So they have to be available. And, you know, I ask our group authors that they're interested in reading, or books that they read when they were younger that they want to read again. And we just try to find them. Yeah. One of the other great things about the group is the really vastly different age range that we have. and over the years it's varied even more, but you know, we've had people as young as in their early 20s and as old as in their early 70s, and having this place for younger queers to talk to older queers in a, you know, they probably wouldn't meet otherwise, and it just hearing those stories, it's been a really fun experience.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You and I discussed a couple weeks ago about, I'm shocked that Stone Butch Blues is not available. I feel like, again, in the 90s when I was in college, everyone had a copy of this book. I had a copy, my friends had copies. Where have they all gone?
They're available online for hundreds of dollars.
It's astounding to me.
It's really a shame. I think this is a book that if any publishers are out there, pick it up and reprint it. It's something that we need to be putting in people's hands still.
We must know, folks.
Right?
We must.
I suspect that Leslie Feinberg's estate is not wanting to reprint it, actually.
Well, let's call them and ask. What's taking? What's the holdup? What could the holdup be? Oh.
It's a shame.
What would you like to read that hasn't made it to the group yet, but that keeps rolling around in your head? That's like, I don't want to tilt the scales in my favor, but
I'm always looking. I want to read like Sarah Schulman. We haven't read yet. I mean, she's someone I feel like we should read. Part of the problem is her books are often hard to get as well. The older ones. Yeah. She's got some newer stuff, but I wanted to read the older stuff for her. And there's a book called All Happy Endings Are All Alike by Sandra Scapitone that I've been wanting to read and can't find that in quantity. I've actually been, every time I see that in print again, I snatch it up. So I've got like 6 copies waiting, but it's not enough for our group yet. And so just hoping that one day they'll print a couple more. Yeah, there's a lot of older books that I keep trying to keep an eye on, or that have only Lucy Jane Bledsoe she just writes literary fiction. Most of her lesbian books are not super lesbian, like the characters are lesbian, and that's just part of their story. It's not the story, and I like that. But her stuff goes out of print really quickly. She's someone I really would like to read for group. She's a great writer.
Do you ever work with the Q Center's library?
You know, they're up the street from me, and I know some of the people who work there, but no, we haven't. We should do that.
Yeah, and they do have... I mean, because it's donated stuff, they have a fair amount of works that are 20, 25, 30 years old. So it's been a nice resource for me when I want to dig around. And I'm sure, but if there's somewhere in the city you could find Stone Butch Blues,
it'd be there.
I'll be there on Monday, so maybe I'll let you know.
Please do.
The group read Nightwood, which goes a ways back.
Yes.
Perhaps the oldest of the books here?
Oh, gosh. If not, then pretty close, I would say. I think that one was something like, in my head is 1903, but I don't think that's quite right. Maybe 1912-ish? Yeah, I think it's one of our oldest ones, if not the oldest one. It was a harder one for the group to read. We are a pretty well-read, pretty intelligent, I'm going to also say kind of critical group. And that one it's written in a different time. I mean, a lot of these books, you know, in the 50s, let's say, are written in a different time, but that's really written in a different time, and it was written in a different way, and that was a bit harder for us. We had some trouble with the language, and it's one of the at least 2 books that we've read that I would consider trans books as well. And we had some good discussions around that too.
when I read it, I just sort of took for granted that it was, I don't want to say psychedelic, but it was in this sort of, you know, everybody was deep in their unconscious, their subconscious, and they were telling these stories that you weren't necessarily supposed to be able to pin down as facts.
It was not a book that's very grounded, for sure. Yeah, which I think can be tough for a reader if they're not expecting that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see Trouble and Her Friends is on the list. Do I remember that being a sci-fi?
It is sci-fi, Yeah. So our group in general doesn't want to read a ton of genre fiction. So we don't read a lot of romance. We'd probably do maybe one a year for people who do want the romance. And we have read a couple different science fiction books. And Guild of Stories is probably the only fantasy. Oh, I guess Ash by Melinda Lowe can count as a fantasy. So Trouble and Her Friends is one of the few sci-fi books that we've read. And that one was really fun.
I really liked that book. I think it was mid to late 90s. It was, everything was cyberpunk, and you know, all our lives were going to be but one of the things I think cyberpunk really foregrounded was that power would be concentrated, that you know, through the digital there would be just slices and tiny spaces for people to live authentic lives.
The part of that book that really struck me was this community that the queer people in the book had. You know, they kept their queer friends together. You know, Trouble and Her Friends, it was this group of queer people who stuck together no matter what. And we really loved that. We read that at a time when there was someone in the group who was a techie. Mm-hmm. So she was able to really help us out with all the computer stuff that the rest of us were like, what are they talking about? It was, that was great timing for that book. But having that little safe place of queerness. We talk about this in group a lot because a lot of the younger people talk about how we don't really need queer spaces anymore because we're accepted, we're integrated, we're, you know. And then the older people in group talk about how they really lament all the places that we used to have that don't exist anymore, all the bars and the clubs and the queer only spaces. And I don't know, the group itself is, it wasn't designed to be a queer-only space. You know, in my head, there's this... And the reason we call it Lesbian Lit Book Group, not the Lesbian Book Group, is you don't have to identify as a lesbian to come to book group. I have this pie-in-the-sky vision of, you know, some straight man wanting to come to group to understand his daughter, you know, and I want us to accept him when that man comes. I want him to feel welcome in our group. Mm-hmm. So that he can read books to better understand his kid. I just have this vision, you know, I don't want people to feel like they have to identify as lesbian to come to group. But I think most of the people who come do. There are a handful that I know identify as bisexual, but in general, most people are lesbian identified, and we like having this group together, of a safe place for us to be.
Yesterday on Twitter, I have an account. All my bio says is that I host this program, what this program is. Somebody messaged me to say that, hey, based on my profile, I am hateful, driven by hate, and lots of other things, lots of other variations on that. It wasn't much to say that if that's where they're coming from, I can't help.
No, it is still an important place to be, right? We still do need to have these places that are safe for us. It's we've come so far, and yet, right? That still happens.
Yeah, and even if it's not about safety, at every moment, there are stories to be told, and it's the way we can tell them is by telling them with one another. And there needs to be some starting places to work from, you know.
That's almost what I mean by safety, right? Is knowing that there are other people like you, and that you have people you can tell your stories with and hear stories of. That's almost what I mean by safety, right? Is that exists at all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. I did just see that, we might come back to that point at a swim. I'm going to think about that. I saw the other day that Jewel Gomez's Guild of Stories has been reissued. 25th yes. anniversary.
Yes.
Very sexy book. I think about it accidentally all of these years, fairly often. It's a book that has not let me go. And I have no interest in vampires. None. I'm negative interest.
I'm the same. I'm exactly the same. I was actually nervous to read that book because I'm so disinterested in vampires.
But Jewel Gomez, she does a great job in there. Just
it is easily my favorite vampire book. Easily. Without there's not even a close second.
The Price of Salt. I have to admit, I've read probably 30 books by Patricia Highsmith, and Price of Salt was the last of those. It was
really?
One of those I held it out.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to have as much of a sense of her head, like what drove her, and then go back to, you know, sort of go back to the beginning of her writing and get a sense. But it was a strange way to do it.
I hope you don't feel like the Ripley series gives you an idea of what was in her head very
well. Well, she has 20 some other books that are much more gruesome than Ripley. It's just I don't
she was not the best person in real life, but boy can she write. What a good writer.
Yeah. So tell me what you think of The Price of Salt.
I personally loved that book. I remember that meeting where we talked about it distinctly. It was one of our larger ones. We had a lot of people coming to that one, and I had tagged so many spots in that book of language that I just loved. And I have a soft spot personally for, I don't want to give anything away in this story, but a soft spot for unreliable narrators. And at the end of that book, I sort of realized that she wasn't unreliable, but we were only hearing her side. Mm-hmm. And that changes things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, all the way through that book, I thought that she was capturing a time in this visceral way. Her language was beautiful. The story itself is compelling. And then if you think about it's taking place in the 50s, and you learn about how if you're a woman who loved a woman in the 50s, what you have to do to hide that, or to, you know, you have to, if you want to share that, then you might lose your children. You don't have the same rights. I think that's a really powerful book.
And she published it under a pseudonym.
She did. Yeah, Claire Morgan was the name she used when she published that. It was only her second book.
Do you have a sense of how long that stayed under pseudonym? I've never actually looked up.
I think a while. I want to say a couple decades at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was not... She was not super open about her life for a while there, even though she was, I understand, pretty promiscuous. she wasn't known outside of her community. Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, over the years, we've read a lot of really good books. A lot of really good books. There have been plenty of books also that we have not all loved, but but like I said, we're a critical bunch. But so when we have liked a book, I mean, I feel like it's a really good endorsement.
What one made it into the group that you did not like?
You want me to call out a book?
Yeah,
I did.
Absolutely. Sometimes those are great recommendations in their own way.
Okay, well, sadly, there are actually plenty that I could choose from. The one I'm going to say, though, is Women's Barracks by Teresca Torres. And the reason we didn't like it is because it was a reissue. So this is a book that was published, I think, in the 40s. I can't remember exactly when. It was reissued just a couple years ago, I think by the Feminist Press. I can't remember. And it was reissued with a completely new edit. And what happened was this woman's husband rewrote the book. And when she wrote it, It's a first person tale of women during the war. I forget, probably World War II, but I don't remember, in the barracks and all of their lesbian exploits, and including hers. And he takes hers out and makes it more of a judgment on everybody else. And it's translated from the French, and he's the translator as well as the editor. And so he changed it so drastically that it sort of ruins the, not just the book itself, but also the meaning behind the book. And so none of us really appreciated that.
This is Preference. We're talking with Elisa Sapphire. Thank you. Elisa is owner of Another Read Through on Mississippi and organizer of the Lesbian Lit Book Group that is hosted at Another Read Through. Shoot, I had a great question. It wandered away. Well, let's go back to safety and community and what that looks like. Obviously, it's important you to be doing this organizing work and bringing folks together to talk about some pretty dense and difficult stuff that comes up in these books.
There's a surprising amount of these books that talk about trauma. I don't pre-read the books, and so I don't always know what the content's going to be or the level of content, how much queer content is going to be in a book. I do some research, and I have to sort of take it on faith sometimes. And I've been surprised over and over again by how many of these books have trauma and how much trauma is in queer history. It really seems pretty interlocking. A lot of these books also take place in other countries. You know, we've read La Bastarda is in Africa and Under the Udala Trees as well. And there's a lot in there that is really traumatic if you come out in those places. And I know that people in our group also have trauma history, and I don't want that to be the what we talk about. I don't want people to have to be triggered when they come to our group, and so I try to be more aware of what we're reading. But it is a place where people can talk about not just what's happened in their lives or what they've heard, but there's these connections made in literature where if you've experienced something and then you see a character experiencing it, or if you've not experienced something and see a character experiencing it, it brings more awareness and it brings more understanding to your experience, to people's experiences, people that you know, their experiences. And I feel like it matters in a really true way that these stories and these histories and knowing them and truly, like, not just on the surface level but underneath, knowing them matters, and I think we're all better for it. Mm-hmm. And it is sometimes hard, but I think we're better for it.
In talking about translated lit, is something something I'm pretty fascinated by. I talked on the show with Hashi Obejas about it. After being confused for like 20 years at reading her first book and believing all this time that she had lived in Portland, no idea that was not true. And quizzing her about it on the radio, she said, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." But we had a great conversation about translation, and I was sick for a while a couple of years ago, and I can only read, I couldn't read anything that was longer than 100 pages, roughly speaking. I just didn't have the concentration, and so it was really easy to go to translations, works that have been translated into English, which often, I mean, obviously there's a choice, there's a number of folks who are making choices about what to translate, so, you know, it's not, you can't just pick from anything. So they're curated, and they're probably curated on the more literary side. And for whatever reasons, cultural reasons, there are writing communities that tend to sort of leave a lot of fluff out, and they leave the reader to do a lot of the work, and I loved that, and I realized the degree to which, in comparison, American literature makes me feel crazy. Like coming back to it and trying, I knew it wasn't going to work. There are so many words, and so little opportunity to let the mind do its whole thing on its own. You know, and there's so much of you know, American lit I read, I see it now, and I think 40% of this easily could be cut right out, and nothing would be missed. And it doesn't seem to matter very much of the genre. So that's been tough for me. It has changed what I can tolerate reading-wise quite a bit. I still check out large books from the library, but I know I'm not going to read them. Because it's excessive. It really is. It's a thing. I mean, it's not at all uncommon. You go to PALS and you can see the difference. Does this strike anything for you? Do you have any sense of this?
I mean, there are some authors I'm thinking of who often write large doorstoppers, and that, in my experience, can be trimmed quite a bit. I agree. I think, I don't know that, I never thought of it as a particularly American trait, but having heard you say that, I can see that, right? We do a lot of things to excess in America, and maybe just using our words once we've, all the writers I'm thinking of who do this regularly are established writers who probably have a little more leeway with their editors who don't have to maybe follow the editor's suggestion as much. But yeah, there are a lot of really big books. And now that you say that, when I think about literature and translation, aside from the Russians, they're all pretty slim in comparison. The Russians still are pretty wordy. But other than them, I hadn't really thought of it before, but yeah.
I don't think that I would have either, except that, you know, I was housebound for a while and really had to make some choices about what deserved my concentration, what I could work with.
I wonder why you didn't do short stories. That's totally where I would have gone.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I do read short stories as I go along. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of a normal part. Right now I'm reading Genevieve Hudson.
Yes.
Who's up for a Oregon Book Award, I guess. And she's local and she's not local and she's queer. So her publisher, PR person said, well, maybe you should.
Local publisher too, by the way.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a, I mean, I like short stories. I don't love them, you know. I kind of have to have a reason, specific reason,
interesting,
to pick one up. I just read Jess Arndt, Large Animals.
Uh-huh.
I read it twice in the last couple of months. I love this book. Gender issues, sexuality issues, just, you know, what is masculine? What is it to be in a body that isn't what you hope it will be? And to make one's way in the world with that. Jess Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, Large Animals. It's at the library. Great writing. One of those books that just, you know, is a series of short stories, and it doesn't let up. You know, she doesn't fall down at all in it. It was really a treat to read and reread. And I had a hard time actually taking it back to the library. So I do read short stories.
Maybe you're just critical. That's okay. You want to really like them. Nothing wrong with that.
I don't know if I can articulate well, but they are so. I think often short story collections are. They don't hang together well. You stop one, and there's no particular reason to go on to the next because it's not related. So that they're not thematically linked. They're just there in the book because they're the same size. And that, you know, I have to really care about an author most of the time to want to do that, to stop and start and stop and start. I think if they were published separately, that might be more interesting. But then I also cannot read a single piece of fiction in The New Yorker, ever. I can't stand it. But they all have the
exact... So you're hard to please, is what you're saying.
I can be, yeah. And yet, you've got great stuff you're picking out for the lesbian lit book group, Bastard Out of Carolina. I mean,
come on, right?
You, Dorothy Allison, you can't do better than that, really.
I mean, that's one of the most heartbreaking books. Mm-hmm. And I think I've overused this word here, but it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. And to be able to write about something so hard in such a beautiful way, I think, is such a talent. Mm-hmm. Such a talent. You know, that book doesn't have a lot of overt queerness to it at all. We had a really interesting discussion about that. But yeah, wow. She's something else.
Yeah.
She really is.
And she grabs poverty and she writes into it in a way that I don't see.
No, it's so brave. Her writing is so brave and so deep down dirty. And she doesn't avoid any of the stuff that people want to look away from when they're talking about whether it is the poverty or the way people live in poverty and with abuse and forgiveness or not forgiving. You read that book and you want to look away, and she doesn't let you, and that's something. I love that book.
Yeah, we're very blessed that she brought that, all of that to us.
I mean, that was one of the first books that really, really talked about abuse in such an open way. It really changed. It changed the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever read Willa Cather?
You know, I love Willa Cather. I don't think she'd be right for the group, though. The group would prefer more lesbian content.
I am pretty fascinated by all of the debate over sort of her personal identity. And
I mean, we don't know, do we?
I think fairly so.
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, I make assumptions all the time, but I don't know what it's really based on.
I think she had company. I think it leans towards Willa Cather is a lesbian. Was a lesbian. yeah, her work is pretty fabulous as well.
Truly.
I remember there was a gay and lesbian sci-fi reading group here, specifically. And I only went once because it was a terrible experience.
Oh.
The group read, we read Left Hand of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And folks only wanted to discuss it from a science fiction point of view. And I just kept saying, hey, this is a political book. There's a whole context. There's a reason it's written. It wasn't written so that some cheesy movie could be made out of it, because we had to watch that too. And no one...
I didn't know it was a movie.
It's old. It was something recorded from PBS and on somebody's VHS. And folks did not want to discuss the book from that point of view.
It's primarily a political book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was her whole point.
Yeah.
So... they missed out on a really good discussion.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't think so. So, you know, I certainly learned more about myself and what I was willing to do or be engaged in. Science fiction is fine, but there has to be a reason for it. So, Samuel Delaney is my passion.
Uh-huh.
Waiting for his new book to arrive. I was hoping it was here today, and my inbox. I have a Tumblr that's mostly about him.
Cool.
And so, you know, so work that uses sci-fi as a medium mm-hmm. to talk about other things, race, politics, gender, and does it well.
Yes.
Because I think those issues come in and out of a lot of sci-fi, but are constrained by, you know, talent and by intent. And so much of it just foregrounds the science.
I actually just read a short story of his. I think it's the only thing by him I've ever read. It was in a collection called Freedom in This Village.
Mm-hmm.
It's 25 years of African-American, mm-hmm. gay African-American literature from 79 to 94, I think. 2004, I mean. And the Samuel Delaney piece in that collection was one of my absolute favorites in the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's great.
He is. He's
just based on that alone, I can say he's great.
Yeah. And he writes in heaps of genres. I mean,
right.
he's really genre fascinated and talented.
But it's because he writes about not, because it's not about the science fiction, it's about the stuff underneath it
mm-hmm.
that he can write in any genre he wants, because he's talking about much more than the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that author, Samuel Delaney, I'll recommend him anywhere, anytime. he does not do radio interviews. Along with another writer that whose work I'm really passionate about, Renee Gladman. Have you read her work?
No.
Also, she does not do radio interviews. And her books, her latest series of books, are actually based on a Samuel Delaney book. she writes this series of stories about that are about a city where something's gone wrong, things move on their own in ways that the narrators find inexplicable, and language cannot keep up with the changes that are happening around them, and people are speaking different languages, so they perpetually have to translate about things they're not even sure that they understand.
Hmm.
And one of the native languages is almost entirely gestural. In a goofy kind of way, and the narrator, someone who's visiting the city, has no context for any of this and has to learn every gesture individually, every interaction, and learn how to move around in the city where language is constantly in the move, the space is on the move. That's Renee Gladman.
So
well worth
always feeling alien in your space, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Ravika series, it's well worth digging into.
Is it technically science fiction then, or?
It's it might fall out of genre altogether. It's too literary, I think, to be science fiction. It's published by Dorothy Press. Who publishes only women authors, except one exception, which is a gentleman who wrote a book under a female pseudonym. And fascinating work. Dorothy Project, if you pick up any of them, the, I don't know, 20 or so books that they've published, unbelievably great.
Hmm.
They just do such a great job.
I love when you can find a publisher and just trust everything.
Yes.
It's the best.
Yes. Yeah, Dorothy Project, folks. A lot of those books are at the library. So go out and go.
Or we can get them for you.
Yes, indeed. Another read through. We just have a minute or two to wrap up. Do you have last thoughts you want to share with us?
I should probably say that anyone's welcome to join our book group. We meet the first Tuesday of every month. So next Tuesday, we're meeting to talk about Riding Fury Home. And anyone can drop in and see what you think about us. We meet at 7 o'clock, go until about 8:30. I'd also always just love to hear from readers about authors and book titles that you think we should be reading. I'm always looking for more.
Mm-hmm. You've heard some of my ideas.
I sure have. I will not forget them.
So to give
I appreciate that.
also, Bertha Harris, Lover.
I don't know Bertha Harris.
Oh, this book, it's... it falls under the... maybe mid-90s, early 90s.
Okay.
Very sexy. It's a great book where things aren't stable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful. Yeah.
I'll look that up. Thank you.
We are going to hear Sassy Black, a queer artist doing some great work in the soul genre. Alisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Discovery of health. Discovery of wealth. Discovery of self. Discovery of wealth. Discovery of health. Discovery of self. Discovery of health. Discovery of wealth. Discovery of self. Discovery of wealth. Discovery of health. Discovery of self.
You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Siren Nation, presenting Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday, Saturday, May 4th at the Alberta Rose Theater, featuring performances from Arietta Ward, Pacific Trio, The Cabin Project, Sarah Clark, and many more. Minors welcome with a parent or guardian. Tickets and more information online at albertarosetheater.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd at 6:30 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. This is the fourth community forum about Zenith Energy's ongoing expansion of their Portland Tar Sands Oil facility. The panel will discuss how this facility's operations can harm people, urban wildlife, rivers, and air quality, as well as background on the terminal site, climate justice impacts, ideas for public action, and more. Again, that's the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.